I'm Felina Jean, and this is Black Broads Abroad. I'm an international woman of leisure who said peace out to the United States in 2011, and I have not looked back except at this ass, honey. Since then, I've lived on four continents with travel to over 40 countries. Along my journey, I've come to know some very compelling Black women from all over the world who also said fuck you to their comfort zones. I created this podcast to inspire Black women in the diaspora to take risks and live their very best lives. So as I began to deliberate about doing a podcast for Black female expats and those aspiring to become expats, I knew that I wanted the very first episode to be about Brazil because it was the first stop for me on my expat journey almost 10 years ago. At the time, I was living in Philadelphia and I had just completed grad school. I was recently divorced and I was sick of my job. I knew I wasn't going to be underappreciated and underpaid at the same damn time. So I was just tired and I was at my friend's house, and at her urging, I booked a solo vacation to Salvador Bahia. Now, leading up to this, I was watching the Black in Latin America series on PBS by Dr. Henry Louis Gates, and I became really intrigued, especially after seeing the feature on Brazil. I knew it was the most populous Black country outside of Nigeria, and the documentary just really encapsulated the magic and the history of Salvador. I kind of just cataloged that in the recesses of my mind, and I changed my screensaver on my computer to Pelourinho, which is the historic center of Salvador during the colonial period. I mean, it's littered with just such beautiful Portuguese architecture, and it was also the market where enslaved Africans were bought and sold. So kind of fast forward to about 6 weeks before my vacation, I just decided, like, fuck it. I'm just going to move there. I didn't know a single soul in the country or on the continent, but I knew that God would make provisions. And so I went for it. Now, a word about visual manifestation. When I tell you I was in the exact same spot of the photograph I had saved on my screensaver just months prior, subliminal seduction is real, y'all. I highly encourage anyone when manifesting anything that you have some kind of visual reminder of what it is that you want. But enough of my rambling. Without further ado, onward to the interview.
Today's guest is Renee Adolfi, owner of Candara Prem, an international tantric holistic practice that offers relationship and sexuality coaching. In 1999, Renee earned a master's degree in counseling psychology in the USA, and in 2013, a postgraduate degree in transpersonal therapy in Brazil. Due to her love of learning, she received a certification as a shamanic medicine woman in 2015 and a certification as a tantric therapist and rebirther in 2016. Because of her zest for growing, she later went on to complete a certified relationship and sexuality coach course in 2018. Renee has been on the path as a holistic therapist for nearly a decade. In addition to tantra, coaching, rebirthing, and shamanism, she also works with many diverse forms of Reiki. Now, she is on a mission to assist a wide range of people in overcoming low self-esteem, depression, sexual dysfunctions, relationship problems, anxiety and stress through therapy, tantric massage, dynamic meditation, psychodrama, and shamanic healing. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
So happy you agreed to interview. Just like a little background, I met Renee while on my fuck this shit sabbatical in Brazil in 2011, and she's such a kindred spirit, and so it's such an honor and privilege to have you as my first guest.
Oh, wow, nice. That is such an honor to be your first guest. So, yeah, I know when I met you, I loved you right away. It was just amazing to be in your presence and and just enjoy a little bit of time in Salvador, an amazing country.
So, okay, you know, obviously my first question is, how did you even arrive to the decision to move to Brazil? Because you had a dynamic practice as a psychologist in Washington, D.C., six-figure lifestyle, you know, beautiful home, and you just decided to go to Brazil. Why? How did that even come about?
Girl, it was so funny because, you know, even though, you know, I had a great house, I had a condo on the side, I had two cars, you know, just basically living that American dream, I was still empty inside, you know? And working, it was just, I started to burn out. I saw the same old, you know, the clients weren't necessarily changing. They were doing well and they were making breakthroughs, but not changing. And I was just getting frustrated. I was like, there has to be more. And, you know, I was just getting tired of the stress, the work type of lifestyle that I lived in the DC area. And so I was like, okay, I read the book Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert. And I was like, I'm going to do my Eat, Pray, Love. And so it was supposed to just be for a year. So I actually shut down my private practice and decided to travel to India, Argentina. And I ended up just doing all of South America, pretty much 3 months in each country. 3 months India, 3 months Argentina, did Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, and then Brazil. When the 3 months came in Brazil, I was like, yeah, I'm going to extend my visa. And next thing you know, like I ended up living in Brazil for 9 years. So getting a student visa, staying longer. And it was just that Brazil called me. Brazil, Salvador specifically, is a magical place. It's a healing place.
It definitely is that.
Definitely. The people are beautiful. The spirit, the energy, the food is amazing. The samba, you know, you can just walk around, next thing you know, you're dancing. And it was just nothing like living in the U.S. It was just peaceful. You were happy. You can enjoy life. Healings happen. It was just, it's just so hard to explain. Like, you just have to be there to see and to feel what Salvador is like, you know? And it's like, I mean, you're in Johannesburg now. So, you know, from what I hear, it's like being in Africa. You know, it's called Little Africa. And so.
Same everywhere, child. I swear we act the same everywhere. So, I mean, one of the questions that I have, because we both come from a Haitian background, and you obviously come from a very traditional Haitian upbringing. So
right.
What was your family's reaction to one, your career pivot, okay, mom, dad, family, I'm a successful psychologist and I'm moving to Brazil to become a tantric holistic therapist and to live on a tantric farm or a favela. Like what did they say?
They thought I was crazy. So I kind of slowly but surely, like slowly started coming out of this closet, right? Of working as a tantric therapist. And so, so before that, it was even like, I started working with energy first, with Reiki. And they're like, you know, we don't believe in that stuff. That stuff doesn't work. And
so you were working with Reiki in the United States?
Yeah, I started working with Reiki in the United States. Mm-hmm. They were like, oh, this is not real, you know? So I kind of already learned to not really talk about my work and stuff like that because, you know, they're just in a different place. And so when I started working with Tantra, honestly, I never really talked to them about it. Even to this day, I haven't spoken to my mom about it.
Your mom is my favorite person, you know. Like, we gotta
get
mom questions. I have a whole...
Yes. So I remember when I made my first video about Tantra, because I, you know, got on YouTube and I was like, okay, I have to start sharing videos. And my sister saw my video and she calls me and she's like, oh, how do you get a tantric massage? I was like, they get naked and I massage them. She's like, you massage them naked? Everything? And I was like, yeah, it's a full body massage. She's like, how do you protect yourself? I'm like, I wear gloves.
That's actually, you know, I actually do have a question about this because we have a mutual friend who was in Brazil living with us. And I remember she was like, oh, you know, she went back to Brazil and she was on a tantric sex farm with you. And she was kind of like explaining what was going on. I was like, girl, are they out there giving pussy massages? I said, okay, no, I am not going to limit what you do to pussy massages. But I mean, to people who are not like you know, super aware of what, like, what tantric massages are, or even, like, mm-hmm. how to have heightened sexual experiences. It's like, this is all new. But I noticed, mm-hmm. like, one of the offerings on your website is yoni massage. Could you elaborate a little bit about what a yoni massage is and, like, what are the benefits of
it? I can. But it's interesting because you said tantric sex farm. Because it's interesting, so many people, when they hear tantra, they automatically think of tantric sex. And mm-hmm. so I lived in a commune and we actually were not allowed to have sex. So what it is, yeah. So what tantra is we're working with the sexual energy. So the tantric sex is only 5%. You have a whole nother 95% where you're working with the energy to learn how to heal yourself, release traumas, release blockages. Also, the sexual energy is the most powerful energy there is. And so with that energy, you learn how to manifest different things. And so that's what it was about. It was about releasing those blockages, the traumas that's in our bodies. It was about learning how to connect to yourself and how to be more intimate and form deeper conscious connections with other people. So that's what living on a commune was. We were doing tantric yoga every day, tantric meditations twice a day, as well as tantric massages twice a week. And so I do yoni massage as well as lingam massage. So yoni is the genital for the female and lingam for the male. Mm-hmm. And so what that is about, the yoni massage is about helping women to release the traumas and blockages that's in their yoni, in their body. So it is a full body massage. Wow. And through that also, once you're releasing those blockages, it helps women to become more orgasmic, because it's high numbers, like 80% of women don't have orgasms because
period.
There's just so like, much period. Yes.
Rewind, hold up. 80% of women don't have orgasms, period, or don't have them with their partner.
Period.
Oh,
and so, yeah, well, and so it's a lot. And, you know, and I see this in my work. I have so many women coming who's never, in their 40s, 50s, who's never had an orgasm in their life.
What is the cause of that? Like, what is the cause of, do you think that maybe, is there a causal link between, like, not having orgasms and not masturbating? Is there, like, what is it?
Yeah, so a lot of these women don't masturbate. And okay. And that's a big part of my process, is getting them to, one, take a mirror and look at their yoni, two, start touching and connecting. You know,
looking we do a lot of vagina in a mirror.
Vagina in a mirror. You know, touching it, self-exploring. I do a lot of guided visualizations, meditations, and the yoni massage. The big thing is not just the masturbation, but where does that come from, why women don't do that? Because of the sexual repression. Mm-hmm. So many of us grow up in a Christian family or Islamic family or Judaism or whatever. And so, you know, I grew up Catholic. You had all this Catholic guilt. Mm-hmm. Sex is a sin. It's only for marriage, to procreate. So you hear all of these things as women. Close your legs. Don't do this. You don't want to be a hoe or slut. You know, when you're a little bit freeing, you're a hoe, you're a slut. All these different things, all this shaming. Hmm. And guilt. So that's what blocks women. And so even as an adult, whether you're married or not, and even if you're married, you still carry all that repression, all that shame, all that guilt. And so you don't allow yourself to fully surrender and feel the pleasure that you can. And that's why I love my job, because I'm helping women to feel, you know, and to feel good, which is their right, you know, and to connect so that they can go have a satisfying sexual life. And once you change that sexual life, your work life is going to improve, like every other area of your life will improve.
I do think that like orgasms are healthy. I mean, for me, I know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely healthy. Like when I'm on 10, like I know when I need to like rub one out, because I'm just thinking
right.
to deal with. But mm-hmm. on the subject of blockages and mm-hmm. bring my mother back into this equation, I remember darling mother in 2011 mm-hmm. when she was visiting you in Bahia, and we bonded. I don't know. How old was your mother? Was she in her 70s then? Or
yeah, she was 2011. Yeah, she must have been she had just turned 70.
Well, it was a great intergenerational dialogue about the nature of orgasms. And this was 9 years ago, and I'm still of this opinion. I'm the type that, like, I've had somebody hit my bottom one time. And that's all it took. Okay, because I think mm-hmm. it was such a connection that I had for 16 years that I definitely mm-hmm. did not want did not want to have. But I feel like the G-spot orgasm particularly like bonds people in a way that for me, I have a problem like till this day, Renee, oh my God, like if it's getting too good, I'm hopping right off the dick or the strap. You are not in my G-spot. Like, so I might need to come in for one of your yoni massages or some kind of...
Yes.
But there's definitely a block. I won't allow anybody to allow myself to be vulnerable in that way again.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It is being vulnerable. It's surrendering.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that is really difficult for a lot of women. Even if you love someone, it's just so difficult to surrender so much.
Completely. I can't even do it with my husband. Mm-hmm. So back to the original question, do you think that there is a difference between like the connectivity that you share with a person with like different kinds of orgasms? I mean, there's G-spot, there's clitoral, there's anal. I mean, do you think there's different levels of connectivity with people?
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, since I've been studying Tantra, I've been learning more and more things just about connections and just touching alone. The more you touch someone, the more it increases the connection. And that's the thing. In a lot of these other countries, in the European countries, in the US, we don't touch enough. And so if you just hug someone for 1 minute, your oxytocin levels are increasing, your dopamine levels are increasing, you're feeling better, it decreases depression, you have more of a connection with that person. Research shows if you want to improve your relationship with your partner, touch them more, put your hands on your legs, on their legs, or around their arms. So imagine just touching. So now if you think about that and you put it to a G-spot massage or, you know, having anal sex and having an anal orgasm, of course the connection is going to be stronger.
I'm touching my pearls now. I'm a prude a little bit.
What? Yeah, girl. When I first met you, you were not a prude. That was my pre-tantra. I was trying to be like you. I was like, this is a woman. I'm trying to be like her.
That's so true.
And it's funny because I had never really spoke to my mom about sex. So you remember,
really?
When you were talking to her about it in front of me, I was like, oh my God, she's talking to my mom about this. Like,
we were totally in agreement about what G-spot orgasms and the bonds that produces. It does. I mean, it's not the same as a clitoral orgasm.
It's not the same. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't want to have that fucking experience with everybody, child. Mm-hmm. I'm scared to have your love just to relinquish that kind of power.
Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so much easier to have a clitoral orgasm as opposed to G-spot. You know, it's not as intimate, you know. And the clitoris, first of all, has about 8,000 nerve endings. So its only source is for pleasure.
Wow.
The male penis has half that, 4,000. So a woman has so much more capacity to feel pleasure in her clitoris than a man does in his penis, you know. So that's what it serves for. But now when you're going inside internally, that's where a lot of the blockages are, you know, even in the clitoral. So there's a lot of women who don't even achieve that, you know, but
it is a shame. Angry bitches are like, I'm just confused.
Angry bitches. No, they just, again, you know, there's just a lot of repression, a lot of blockages. And so it's just needing to repress, to release all of that. A lot of times what I find, a lot of women that have difficulty, they're very controlling. So you'll see that they're controlling in their work life. They're trying to control their friends, their family, everything. So it's like, you got to let go of control. And sometimes it's just scary for them to let go of control. But that's a common denominator of what you will see. And of course, if you're not releasing, I hate to say angry bitches, but you're going to have a lot of stress pent up, built up inside of you. So you're not going to be the happiest, you know.
So you also offer, you have a host of offerings with Prada Prim. And you also offer relationship and sexuality coaching, couples.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So could you elaborate a bit about that?
Oh, I do have to say, I'm excited. I will be a tantra couples therapist on the Lifetime Married at First Sight, which aired January 1st.
Hey, hey!
Yes. Oh, so look out for me on Lifetime. Yes. I think I'm not sure which episode I'll be on, probably the 5th or 6th, because they're just beginning to show the couples who got married and what's going on. So I'll be coming in midway at some point. So I'm excited about that.
Are you sworn to secrecy until the episode premiere?
Yes. I can't share anything that happens.
Okay.
No spoiler alerts.
Both at O'Brien, which I mean, I think did that help with exploding your practice at all?
It did. So yes, I was on Soledad O'Brien, matter of fact. And that did. I've gotten a number of calls, people, you know, contacting me on Facebook, on Instagram, emailing me. I have people joining my retreats. So yes, I do retreats as well for women of color. I'm going to be doing a retreat for couples in August. Both of these are in Brazil. So as my work with couples, I do private sessions, group sessions, anywhere from like the tantric therapy where I'm talking to them, helping them connect, learn how to become more intimate and connect with their partner, to teaching them how to do tantric massage on each other, how to have tantric sex, oral sex. I teach the whole nine, everything. Yes.
Girl, now you know I'm a pillow princess. I'm thinking about converting to Judaism because everybody knows good Jewish girls don't give blowjobs. I might need to take that to step up my game one of these days. So you teach, what else do you teach with your sexuality coaching with couples?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I teach the men predominantly how to really connect with the woman and not be in that fantasy world, because so many men learn through porn. Mm-hmm. And so they have in their mind, this is how you satisfy a woman. And a lot of times what they learn through watching porn is not realistic. And so women are faking or they're not really feeling. I'm teaching them how about consent, how to communicate and talk to each other about what feels good and what they need from their partners. You know, on our tantric couples retreat in August of 2020, I'm going to be partnering with Emmanuel Taylor, and he's a great tantric therapist as well, who, you know, we're going to be working on the love languages, getting people to understand what their sexual archetypes are, and just really learning how to connect
with each other, archetype. With their partner.
Yes, there's sexual archetypes.
Oh, do tell.
You're going to have to come on that retreat to learn more about that.
Mine is starfish. Is there anything else that you have coming up on the horizon that you want to tell people about?
Yeah, well, so August of 2020 will be the couples retreat. In Bahia, and that's just going to be a great way for people, for couples, to get out of their comfort zone at home, come to another place that's beautiful beaches. We're going to be in Bahia, about 2 hours away from Salvador, you know, where you're going to pretty much have like your own private beach. We're going to travel through Salvador as well, do some cultural things, and it's just really nice, and do a lot of couples activities. April of 2020, I do a retreat just for women of color, exclusively for women of color, to really work on their sexuality. I do a lot of things where we're, you know, like I talked about, looking at yourself in a mirror, connecting to your yoni, releasing those traumas and blockages, doing yoni yoga, you know, and different tantric activities to really let go of those traumas that's inside, so that the women can be able to feel more let go and just have a great, you know, sexual life and productive life in general. You know, so I say the best thing to really know about what I'm doing is just following me on Facebook or Instagram at Renee Adolphe, R-E-N-E-E, Adolphe, A-D-O-L-P-H-E, or Prandhara Prem, P-R-A-N-D-H-A-R-A-P-R-E-M, because I have where I'm doing my workshops. I live in Brazil, but I'm constantly traveling. Like, I just did a retreat in Bali.
Yeah,
on this past December.
Years, girl.
Yes. I loved it. Bali is amazing. I'm already planning for another retreat in Bali next year for 2021. 2020, I'll be in Portugal doing a retreat for women on love and in Portugal. Then I'll be in the States a little bit doing a couple of workshops. So I travel throughout doing workshops, retreats all over, you know, internationally. And that's the thing I do want to say that I love about, since I've been working with Tantra, I've learned how to channel my sexual energy where I'm not just wasting that energy, losing that energy. Mm-hmm. And I could really begin to manifest the career that I really want. You know, when I worked as a, you know, in the States to my private practice, I've always wanted to do retreats, but I wasn't able to do that. And it wasn't until I started to really learn how to manifest and channel this energy, I began to be able to manifest different things, being on Lifetime, being on Soledad O'Brien, traveling the world. So, you know, this energy work is real. You know, I have no doubt in my mind now. And so regardless of what other people say or think, I'm living proof of what it can do, you know. And I do the work, and I'm completely different than when we met, you know. I was much more of a prude. Well, in my mind. But the thing is that, no, not really, I guess. I mean, in my mind. Like I've always had a lot of sexual energy. And I remember even in high school, people would, you know, the boys would be like, oh, you flirt a lot. And so for me, I didn't see that as flirting. I just saw me being my natural, I'm always smiling, happy, friendly self, you know, and guys would think I was flirting. And in my mind, I wasn't. Mm. And so, you know, I had to really learn how to work with that sexual energy and know how to not just be like, okay, I'm flirting with someone, you know, just kind of how to really allow that energy to come out when it's appropriate, and when it's not, to just kind of subdue that energy a little bit.
Yeah, and Brazil has a lot of sexual energy. I mean, I probably have regrets because, I mean, I'm 36 now. When I lived in Brazil, mm-hmm. I was 27, freshly divorced. Mm-hmm. I had fun. Just put it like that. Had a good old time in Brazil. But because this show is about encouraging Black women who perhaps want to make the leap and become expat, mm-hmm. I wanted you to share just a piece of advice. Like, what advice would you give to women who are thinking about taking the leap as an expat?
Just do it. Get out of your head. Stop thinking. There's always going to be someone telling you, don't do it, it's dangerous, or, you know, saying something, and that's their fears. So don't allow other people's fears to stand in your way. And so it took me a long time before I could leave. Things kept coming up. I had to fix my house, my roof, you know, something happened to my roof and I had to repair that. And it was like one thing after the other. And then people were like, oh my God, like, really, you're going to travel alone? Like, all kinds of things. And finally, I was just like, I picked a date, I bought the ticket, and I was like, I don't care what happened, I'm going. So, you know, you can plan and plan and plan, and things keep coming up, and it just never happens. So again, it's like, you know, get all your ducks aligned, whatever you got to do with houses, you know, rent it out, whatever you got to do, but don't keep letting things get in the way, and you just have to do it. And let me tell you, the universe really conspires in our favor. And it's not until you leave the U.S. and right. you're traveling alone that you realize things work out. Things happen. Synchronicity happens.
Girl. It's the best mm-hmm. life decision I've ever made in my life. I was reflecting over the decade. Yeah. Chunking the deuces to the United States was the single-handed best decision I've ever made in my life.
Yes.
And like living,
mine too.
Yeah, living in Brazil, it was the most stress-free period of my life. Like the concept of stress did not exist in my life. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, talking about that stress, it's like when I lived in the States, you know, I went to see a naturopathic doctor and she was like, Renee, you are so stressed. Your body cannot handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so living in the States is not conducive to your health care. And so since I've been in Brazil, I do all kinds of things. Like a day could consist of me getting a massage, doing acupuncture, you know, all these different things for my health. And I'm like, I can't imagine having a 9-to-5 job and getting these things done for my health. You know, and so it's so different. Like it's stress-free and I glow more. I'm healthier. I'm at a healthier weight. I love my body. You know, like my body just feels better. The food that I'm eating, you can feel a difference between the food and the food in the States. When you're in any other country,
I miss those kilos.
Yes. I mean, and the fresh juices and a coconut water. You don't have all the preservatives. We're not eating the food out of the can and in the box, the frozen boxes. I mean, you're getting fresh food. So it's a difference and you feel better. You know, and you really do. And it's like, you can't be stressed. You got the beach, you're walking, next thing you know, somebody's playing music and you're dancing on the streets with people you don't even know.
You know, it's like the clapping, like just, it was spontaneous clapping when the sun set every night. Just like, it was just, oh my gosh, I just miss Brazil. I've been there since I left. I haven't been back since 2012. I need to fill on my agenda for 20. Maybe I need to come to one of your retreats, girl.
Girl, come. April 2020. for the couples, for the woman's retreat, I think I have one slot. The couples were about to launch now. So, but for the women's, I think I have one slot that's been launched already. So, girl, I think that slot is waiting for you. One spot, one space.
One last question for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what lessons have you learned about stepping outside of your comfort zone?
You grow so much. With me stepping out of my comfort zone, I got to know myself better. I got to know what I can and can't do, what my limitations really are, and that there really aren't that many limitations. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're in your comfort zone, you think, you know, you feel comfortable. Obviously, that's why your comfort zone, but you're not taking risks. You're not growing as much as you can. You know, when you step out, it's scary. It's scary as hell because you don't know what's going to happen. But you
older.
Yeah, especially when you're older. And that's the thing. I left the U.S. at 35.
Okay.
So I was already set in my career, set in my life. I was 35.
Yeah.
And so that was the scariest thing ever. And when I traveled and I left, everyone I was meeting were young because it's, you know, the it was kids leaving, traveling in their 20s, many of them from Europe during their gap year. And I was like, I'm this old lady traveling, got all these young kids around me. Like, what the hell am I doing?
You're not an old lady. But wait, actually, do you remember what's Ariel's aunt's name?
Arletha.
She was in Brazil with a whole slip on under her jean dress.
Yes.
Girl, bye.
Right.
You had a whole slip on, girl. You are not an old lady.
True, true. I don't wear slip. Oh my God. My skirts, my dresses are so short right now.
Yeah, I'm facing that now. Like, even though I'm like almost 10 years in being an expat, being 36 and starting over, like I'm starting over in South Africa. It's much different than, I've been doing this for I don't know how long, but it's just much different. Like the stakes are sometimes higher when you're older, but like my advice is, just go. You know,
just go figure it out.
You know, even if you just give yourself like an appointed, you know, I'm gonna go for like a month or two, like give yourself that space if you can.
Yeah, if you can, because then you'll get to kind of know the area, feel it out, and decide, you know. I definitely think that, I know there's so many people who want to leave the U.S. and be an expat, but there's also so much support. There's a lot of expat groups. You know, in Brazil, we have Black expat groups. I visited Argentina. They have a Black expat group in Argentina. So you have expat groups, Black expat groups. There's like Black Packers of Southeast Asia. So even when I was in Thailand, I met a lot of Black expats. When I was in Bali just now, I met a lot of Black expats. I'm in all of those Black expat groups in Thailand, Bali, Argentina, Brazil, everywhere I go. And so there is a good support network. So,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, don't feel like you're going to get there and be all alone, because you will meet friends, you will make people, and those are people who are established, who have been there, and so they can give you advice, they can tell you, you know, where to go, what to do, just do your research on Facebook. There's a lot of those expat groups. Join those groups first. You can start getting a feel for who lives there. Start asking questions. How much will you need to survive per year? You know, whatever questions.
And that's one of the things I wanted to point out, because so many ways that you can do it. I mean, like, there's young people that do it and they stay in hostels. You could find, when I first got to Brazil, I actually stayed with a host family for 2 weeks and went to language school. And then, well, I lucked up. I had a mutual friend who had a place there, and I lucked up on like a $2 million oceanfront pad with 360 views where I was paying $600 a month to live. So
yes. I remember that.
That's the universe conspiring, okay, girl? Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Just seeing you in 2020. I need to come back to Brazil.
Me too. And I need to make it onto the continent. So if we don't meet in Brazil, then we'll have to meet in Johannesburg or somewhere for sure.
That would be wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Happy New Year.
Okay, and Happy New Year to you too.
Bye.
Have a good one. Thank you. Bye.
Renee is so great, and she is one of the many people that I've met and developed long-lasting relationships with when I embarked upon this expat journey. So hope you like the interview. Let me know what you think. What are your 2020 intentions? Like, what new landscapes do you want to discover? Drop me a line and give me some feedback at Black Broads Abroad on IG. That's BlackBroadsAbroad. ABROAD and blackbroadsabroad at gmail.com. Before we close out this segment, I wanted to share a journal entry I serendipitously happened upon, and I wrote it like 8 years ago to the date when I was culminating my 6-month stay in Brazil. I hope it inspires someone to step out on faith and live outside your comfort zone. I promise there's joy on the other end. Moving to a continent in a new country where I knew no one and making dozens of friends, some who have become extended family, has been the best life decision I have made. I will miss waking up in the morning to the ocean in my backyard and hearing my neighbors race on jet skis, going to the beach in the middle of the winter, wearing a G-string bikini, something I never do in the United States, eating moqueca, acai, and dining at Comido Kilos, fresh sucos, picking up on a new language and new customs, watching impromptu capoeira matches in the streets, pelerino on Tuesday nights, samba, eating fried queijo, drinking caipirinhas, aka fuck me in a glass, double-sided kisses, Brazilian funk music, the most laid-back dogs on the planet, candomblé ceremonies, the celebration of the orixás, clapping as the sun sets over the ocean every evening. Thank you to all of those who have made this experience more than what I could have ever dreamt. Te amo, beijos, muito obrigado, pelas boas lembranças.
Let me tell y'all motherfuckers what happened last week.
Well, it appears that Trump done entered us into World War III, and the Black delegation on Twitter has made it clear under no uncertain terms that we don't have shit to do with this mess. Really, like, having lived in the Middle East for over 4 years, I think that this is going to galvanize the region. I was watching a news report on Al Jazeera, which, in my opinion, is the most reliable and unbiased news source out there, but a pundit warned that if you're an American living in the Middle East, living in the Southwest Asia region, you should leave immediately. And I know a lot of people are of the opinion that there's only like military and government officials who live in the Middle East, but there are tons of Americans, and we are deep out there and represented in every profession you could possibly think of. So I'm just sending prayers to all of my friends that are in the region. Stay safe. And have your go bag ready. Meanwhile, it seems all of the Blacks went to Ghana for the Year of the Return festivities this year, and the New Year's Eve pictures looked so lit. All of the pictures looked so lit. Reportedly, Ghana issued nearly 1 million visas, and $1.9 billion was generated for the Ghanaian economy as a result. Leaders of other African nations are getting in on the marketing efforts, with Benin hosting the Gate of No Return Marathon in 2020. The event's aim is to help heal the wounds that slavery left behind by reconnecting the descendants of those trafficked from the motherland. Nigeria also announced that they'll be hosting the Door of Return in 2020. While these are obvious diaspora-targeted marketing tactics, I encourage African Americans to visit Africa. While the Western Coast has special significance, just throw a dart at the map. There's 54 countries to choose from. I encourage you all to visit some country in Africa on 2020 if you can. In Water is Wet news, to the shock of absolutely no one, Tyler Perry announced that he doesn't outsource the writing for any of his 5011 shows on television. Newsflash, we can tell. His work ethic is obviously unmatched. The studio he's built is outstanding by all accounts, but damn, a prolific storyteller he is not. Get some talented Black writers on your team in 2020, Tyler, please. In amazing news, Lizzo is taking a hiatus from Twitter and also announced that she's considering having a naked concert. So now her tribe can pay to see whatever it is that she does, and the rest of us don't have to be subjected to BBW soft porn outside of our Pornhub feeds. Honestly, I've never listened to her music, and I truly believe she's probably phenomenally talented, but I can't get over the sheer iconography of fat, hypersexual, Black mammy minstrelsy. She's out here looking excessively parched, and I hope that she takes this time to drink some water. Meghan Markle and Prince Harry announced on social media, to the shock of the royal family, that they will be abdicating the royal throne. I'm proud of the move. I noticed that they're going to be splitting their time between the UK and Canada, and it seemed like Meghan low-key said fuck you to the United States too. But I'm not mad. They treat her so poorly in the British media. You'd think that a Black woman with the phenotype of an octoroon would be treated better. But the way they harp on her Blackness, you'd think she was Wesley Snipes. Do you guys remember when the extended royal family were meeting Meghan for the first time? I don't know her name, but it was one of them royal bitches. But she pulled up with a black face brooch on her blazer. That's fucked up, but so my kind of shade. But anyway, good luck to Meghan and Harry. And that's it for...
Let me tell y'all motherfuckers what happened last week.
Until next time.
So God, but God is real. I used to come home drunk from school, laying up with men's. Out there prostituting, having oral sex with my mouth, licking.
Amen. Remember you in prayer. Anyone else have a word from the Lord, a testimony of God's goodness?
I have a word from the Lord on today. 2020 is upon us, and since y'all, as in the ubiquitous stratosphere of zennial pop cultural critics, that seem to have a rabid fixation with cancel culture, I've got a well-deserved nominee for you. I submit to you, Tom Girl Ass Niggas. What is a Tom Girl Ass Nigga, you might ask? And why must they be canceled? Tom Girl Ass Niggas exhibit a predefined set of behaviors unbefitting of those who postulate to be men of a certain refined ilk. Tom girl ass niggas are not limited to any creed, culture, or century in particular. In fact, Tom girl ass niggas have existed since time immemorial. Judas, who betrayed your Lord and Savior, was a Tom girl ass nigga. Your president, for instance, is a Tom girl ass nigga. Kobe Bryant, when he dry snitched on Shaq, exhibited Tom girl ass nigga qualities. But for the sake of my thesis, I'd like to limit this sermon to the Tom girl-ass nigga that so befittingly refers to himself as WAC 100. Such an appropriate pseudonym for a nigga that is indeed 100% whack, who as a result of his whack and patently blasphemous misconduct directed toward our beloved black savior, Ermias Ashkodom, referred to herein as Nipsey Hussle, was resultantly delivered a clean fade by the big apostle J-Rock. I invite you to open your Bibles to the 18th chapter of John, verse 10. When you find it, say amen. I'll be quoting from the New International Version of the text. Then Simon Peter, who had a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant, cutting off his right ear. Here we find in the text that Yahshua ben Yosef, whom you call Jesus, had a real nigga on his back. Can I get an amen for the real niggas? Since the epoch of time, you see, sucker shit has been met with redress. We find here in the text that Yahshua ben Yosef's trusted disciple, Simon Peter, became aware of the Tom girl-ass chit-chatter that was occurring about his big homie in the streets of Galilee, and was so compelled to cut off a nigga's ear. That is why I shall not call a foul to the alacritous ass-whooping delivered to WAC 100 by the big apostle J-Rock. You see, the charlatan that is WAC 100 had been bloviating all up in the interviews and on his selfie stick about a real nigga he never could be. The self-proclaimed big OG Pyru fixed his mouth to declare that the late, great Nipsey Hussle is not a legend, when what he should have done is taken heed to the words that our revered prophet Nip spake when he forewarned his enemies that a bitch slap would commence if one dared defile his name in the city of his birth, fortuitously remarking in a radio interview,
"You say anything bad about Nip in a certain part of LA, a nigga will slap you."
Mm-hmm.
"Not me, somebody will slap you for that."
Mm-hmm.
"So just watch, pick your words wisely and be respectful about something that you are not native to."
Yeah.
There are codes, ladies, gentlemen, and non-binary human beings. Codes that we are behooved to abide by. Tantamount among them is respect. And when there is a violation, Tom girl-ass niggas must be G-checked. As our contemporary Comptonian psalmist, Brother Kendrick Lamar, remarked in his hymnal offering entitled DNA, "See, you's a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA." WAC exhibits the precise brand of behavior that makes it easy for a woman to give a stud some pussy. It is what Jay-Z meant by "my baby mama harder than a lot of you niggas." It is the empirical fact of the matter that many of the women that I know and love possess more testicular fortitude than some of the clowns that vigorously purport themselves to be men and we have pussies. This is what our society has amounted to. Tom girl antics being amplified and commoditized for mass cultural consumption to the chagrin of the sucker duckers among us. Now, you may not be familiar with the patriarchs of this narrative and quite possibly befuddled on what a WAC 100 even is. But I encourage you to dig deeper into the allegory, to identify the archetypes of the story. Who is your Simon? Who is your J-Rock? Who is your number one ride or die? And who are the WAC 100s in your midst? The moral of my Sunday sermon today is to keep them squares about your circle. I encourage you, my dear listeners, to take a vow on today. A vow to do away with any participation in and or amplification of sucker shit in 2020. Let's cancel the trend of giving credence to clowns. To those who I may have offended with my brash, perhaps even irreverent delivery, I leave you with these parting words from Miss Lauryn Hill. And even after all my logic and my theory, I add a motherfucker so you ignorant niggas hear me. God bless.